Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Leet Posen podcast with Cody Walmsley and Chris Coriel. Get ready for a high-energy, rancorous take on the state of affairs in the InfoSec and privacy industries. Chris and Cody are about to shine a light on the cyber-industrial complex. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello, everyone. My name is Cody Walmsley. Welcome to Leet Posen, where myself and my friend Chris Coriel are going to talk about all the latest cool stuff going on in information security and privacy. We're going to talk about our gripes. We're going to talk about our grudges. We're going to talk about cool stuff. We're going to talk about awesome stuff. But right now, I'm going to introduce Chris Coriel so he can tell you who he is.
Well, thank you, Cody. Hey, everybody. Chris Coriel here. Currently a security InfoSec professional, been in security related positions forever, about 15 years, makes me an old guy now. What we want to talk about is how Cody and I met back in 2014 when we both worked at a security related startup. We were doing cool stuff with security operations platforms and getting out in the world before those things existed. So we've known each other 7 years now, and throughout that time, we've both been in agreement that cybersecurity as a whole is basically just a big marketing scam for what really is just better operational readiness. So this kind of all started for me way back when Cody and I were working together. We were pushing our platform in every vertical, trying to get our name out there. What really struck me is when we had discussions with those particular rating agencies. And at the time when we were doing, we didn't even have a vertical yet, right? We were talking, Cody and I did many calls with their quote unquote experts, telling them what we do and how we do it and how this was like the new thing. It was a new shiny object. And it was really eye-opening. So they basically wanted us to pay to be listed, right? And we had to create the space to fit into since one didn't exist at the time. It's really telling for basically both of us that the whole thing is basically a pay-to-play smoke and mirror show about who's the best of breed. And then those who couldn't afford it, we weren't even there to qualify. It's pretty sad. Bringing it to modern times, what's more even shocking is my current role today, going through some purchasing, looking at some vendors for certain things we're buying in the InfoSec space. When I talk to our vendor management, it's amazing. They say, well, did you go through the rating agencies? I'll call them that, right? I can't think of a better name. I don't want to list them specifically, but our vendor management people, they basically have to go out to them first to see who's best of breed. So even though everybody knows it's a pay-to-play scheme, they're still the trusted ones when it comes to buying new stuff, especially in a big corporation. This is pretty shocking. So anyways, Cody and I have been having these conversations for over 6 years now. We're finally putting our thoughts into the world. We want to hear what you guys have to say about it. Cody's got a little different perspective. He's on the legal side of things. I'm on the tech side of things, and he's seen similar scenarios more from the privacy standpoint. And the interesting about all this, we both come to the same conclusion that all of this InfoSec hocus pocus boils down to pretty much one simple thing. It's all about training, right? And if everybody was more security aware, security focused, we wouldn't need the millions of dollars of these perimeter network endpoint, IoT office, and other tools that we got today. That's just false protection. It's kind of like, you know, what they say about airport security. It just makes you feel safe, even though it doesn't make you any more safe than when we were back in the 80s before that stuff even existed, where you could basically pull up to the airport half an hour before your flight and walk right up to the gate and you're ready to go. We'd be way more secure, and from my point of view, that if we started to protect the organization from, instead of from the outside in, but from the inside out, right? And I'm not just talking about phishing training, all that does help, but total security focus. You start with your own devices, both your mobile, your laptops, your work email, shared drives, USBs, phones, copiers, and even the mailrooms, because even they're not safe. All these places are prime targets. They can be breached a number of different ways. Forget about the hackers, the servers, log files. Those are all important, but we got to start where all the breaches happen, and it's with the users. So I'll give it back to Cody, and he can tell you from what he's seen how that's on point. Over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, I mean, what you're describing here is security theater, and there's a lot of that out there. And this is sort of the gist of our podcast, and that is the cyber industrial complex. When, you know, next week we're going to dive into that topic a little bit more, but it's all about sort of exposing this self-feeding beast that has become the cybersecurity industry. And we're seeing the same thing, of course, on the privacy side. I think that the privacy side is a little more nascent. It's a little newer. It's being driven by different regulatory schemes and different, you know, user interests and that sort of a thing. But I think privacy and security are closely related in that regard, especially in how these industries are developing. I think the other thing that I would point out, or at least want to describe when it comes to what you're saying with these rating industry, with these rating companies and that sort of thing, is we see that also. I'm on both the customer and vendor side, technically. as a lawyer, I get to do both. And you know, I just went through this process myself. You know, lawyers and law firms also have, the rating systems like you're describing, where, you know, we've got to fill things out, and it's in many ways, a lot of them feel like they're pay to play and that sort of a thing. And it's difficult to, I think as a customer, as a client to dig through that and really understand, okay, what is it that they're actually doing. I mean, you're looking at a lot of just vague reputational sorts of things. And I think the same exists when you're talking about the technology vendor ratings. I think a lot of it just, you know, it depends on what your name is, and whatever your name is, you're going to be up in, you know, the top right quadrant based right. In many ways on that. And it's not really about what you've done, what, you know, your level of expertise is, and, you know, what novel approaches you might be taking to whatever the problems are. So anyway, there's a lot to talk about today, but today is just our intro. So I think I'll just talk just real briefly about sort of who I am, just in case anybody didn't catch that. So my name's Cody Walmsley. I'm a cybersecurity or information security lawyer. I also do privacy law. I work in a law firm right now. I have been in-house at a variety of companies. Like Chris mentioned, we both work together at a cybersecurity startup company. And, you know, over the years, I've been able to get a decent amount of exposure, I think, on both sides of this, you know, from the vendor and the customer space, to see kind of what the issues are, and to see how the industry is sort of playing out. And so with that, I think maybe we should just go ahead and dive into our topic for today. We've spent a good 7.5 minutes just describing sort of what we're all about, but I think people will figure it out as we start talking here. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, for sure. I think so. We don't want to bore people to death in our first episode, so.
No way. All right. Well, so here's the deal. We've got a big holiday coming up, Chris, and we just talked about security awareness being important, right?
Absolutely.
And security awareness is important. And given that, I was thinking the other day about what is sort of the greatest risk that people have? And especially since everybody's been going home to work, they're no longer within the perimeters of their company environments, probably when they're using their equipment and that kind of stuff. So now everybody's kind of got a responsibility for their own endpoint protection from a corporate standpoint. But let's walk it out a little bit from that, because that might be a little too in the weeds.
That's just a little technical, Cody.
Yeah. So here's what I want to talk about. The other day, I was looking on Twitter, which I do sometimes, and somebody posed a question. Let's say that you've got a friend or family member, and they don't know anything about security, but you're a security professional, and you want to get them a security-themed Christmas present that you know they're going to use and is going to help them through whatever their life style is to improve their security posture. What do you think you should get them? I'll throw that at you, Chris. What's your first reaction to that?
LastPass or any password manager. How many times have you asked someone that you're helping them log into their email? Because, of course, for the 15th time, they're trying to change your password because they don't remember what it is. Or they've written it down somewhere and they can't find the sticky note. So I say, I vote for a password manager, something simple, web browser plugin that they could put them in there and actually have it auto-generate a password that has nothing to do with their birth date and their social security number and their kids and dogs and cats' names and all those crazy things people do. Mm-hmm. Or use password 123. And I think that would be my vote. And I know it's not a great gift, but in the end, it's a little selfish. Being the InfoSec guy I am, I'm the tech support for my family. So it would be great.
Do you think they'd use it? I mean, we were talking about boomers and, you know, your mom and my mom. Are they going to use LastPass if you give them an account?
If you set them up so that they don't know they're using it, then yes. I would set my mother up because she only does everything on her phone. So I'd have to set it up so she would go to the, you know, her email and it would just log her in and she wouldn't know the difference. So yes, it'd be a little painful in the beginning. I'd have to do a lot of work, but it would save me because I can't tell you the number of times they call me and they, oh, I changed my password and I don't know what it is. And now I got to pay a bill. It's always about paying a bill because that's all the boomers do is like they use the internet to pay bill and send junk email to you. It's about all they need. So they don't use the whole OS like you and I do. Like they don't even know what the rest of it does. And we just gave them like this huge vulnerability out in the world. And then they go connect every free Wi-Fi that's in it, that they every store they walk in, and who knows who's you know perusing those networks. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I don't use a password manager. I just reset my password every time. So I don't have any idea what password I use
every time.
Every time, you gotta go get that
email and click on the verification. Oh my god!
Yeah, but I know my email password. I only need to know one, and then it's just constantly resetting password. That's what I do.
Tell that to your parents or your brothers and sisters. Here, don't need a password. Just reset it every time. Yeah, they don't even have the patience to wait for the browser to load as they keep clicking. Why is it not working?
Slow down. Well, so here's some other ideas that people threw out here as things to get for their for their security challenged friends and family. So one of them was a YubiKey. What do you?
Of course, yeah, I could see my mom using that. Where do I plug it in? What do I do with this? Yeah. Oh my gosh, a YubiKey.
Yeah, here's something for you to keep track of.
Every 10,000 people know what that is.
Yeah, I don't think a YubiKey is probably the best choice. All right,
I vote no.
No down, on the YubiKey.
Down,
okay.
Down.
All right. How about a lockpick and lockpicking set?
Yeah. If you're at DEF CON, sure, I'd get every one of those guys one of those, but not my family. Uh-huh. Who's using a lockpick? And they're like, whose family's picking locks? Really?
What's your mom going to do with a lockpick set, Chris?
Lose it. That's what she's going to do. She's going to put it in a drawer and never find it again.
Is that going to make her life more secure?
It might help her when she locks herself inside her condo and she can't get out. Maybe she can use it then. But other than that, no. Not at all.
All right. Here's the next one. RFID blocking wallet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of guys walking around. Now people don't even go to the stores. So what are they going to do? Go to people's homes and try to scan their cards, their wallets? Oh, my gosh. Trader Joe's, maybe. You can maybe get away with it there. I think that's the only place people go these days, grocery mm-hmm. shopping.
Yeah, I don't, I get how that seems cool to have an RFID blocking wallet. I think my wallet probably is RFID blocking. I don't know, but I mean, what's the real risk of that? I don't, it doesn't seem like that's really going to move people in the direction of materially being more secure than they were before they got the wallet.
When's the last time you read on Krebs on Security that the last breach was due to somebody's credit card numbers getting stolen using RFID scanners in the mall? Probably never.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing. Okay, let's say your credit card does get compromised. What do you have to do about it? call your credit card company. Get the credit card canceled.
You get a new card. Nothing happens. The bank gets their money back, and you move on with your life. Okay, next. What's the next one? Because that's terrible.
Okay, well, here's one that I thought up. How about a Chromebook?
Ah, well, I like that idea. It kind of blends in with mine. So I was saying about password managers and then how people of our parents' age only really use the browsers. So the Chromebook, I think, would be the next logical choice. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, the reason I'm thinking of it is, you know, like with a Windows laptop or a Mac laptop, I mean, you get the full-blown operating system with all the vulnerabilities and all of the patching responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah.
And going back to what I initially was talking about is everybody's now responsible for endpoints and they're outside of the perimeter and all that kind of stuff. That's a lot to try to manage. I mean, there are automatic updates and that sort of a thing, but it's not enough. You can turn it off, and there's a lot of exposure. There's a lot of power with those operating systems. You know, whereas on a Chromebook, you know, there's not much there. I mean, there's stuff, but it's not as much. And I think just because of the nature of, you know, how little is really running or stored on a Chromebook, you just by necessity are going to have, or by its nature is going to be more inherently secure, or you know, at least there's less to be exposed. Yeah.
right. So here's the other thing I just thought of. So even with the new OS updates on my MacBook, I know the OS is becoming, the desktop or laptop OS is becoming more like the mobile OS. So that means a lot of the apps are now sharing locations and not that you're taking your laptop around and is sharing it, but it knows your, you know, your home address. It knows when you go to the maps, it already pulls up like, you know, do you want directions from here, even on your laptop. So it's doing a lot of things the mobile devices are doing, which is kind of scary, because now for someone who doesn't know what this stuff is doing and know how to turn it off and it's defaulted to on, all of these apps are now giving away information that somebody doesn't really have to hack you, right? You know, you know, there's probably ways they can get in if they get your email or whatever and they get on. I don't know how they would do it, but there's all kinds of ways to get on someone's laptop and just listen. So it's not about hacking and pulling things away. It's actually, you know, the operating systems are giving away your information. So I think a Chromebook's a great start, especially since, you know, if you give it to them and help them lock down, because, you know, Google is not much better. They have a lot of location-based stuff and everything you do is trackable, and everywhere you go, everywhere you shop, I mean, all that stuff is really your PII, so to speak. I mean, you notice it too, right? You know, you and I are both car guys and we're always looking at cars, even though we're not buying anything new. But then you go to a different site and all of a sudden the car you're just looking at on Auto Trader shows up as an ad. It's like, okay, well, they're the browser's listening and watching, and every site is pulling information of everything you've done. So, you know, you set up your parents and sisters and brothers' Chromebook so that things are a little more private, and you can sleep well at night knowing that their bank account's not going to get compromised. I mean, I remember, I think it was just last year, my mother called me and asked me what Venmo was. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, I just had Venmo, like the bank called me and said Venmo took $750 out of my bank account. My mother doesn't know what Venmo is. She just never used the app. So how the heck would they have gotten her, you know, create an account with her bank account to connect to it? But somehow they did. And luckily the bank gave her the money back, and we actually had to change her account and all kinds of crazy stuff, but just stuff like that. So, I mean, who knows? I have no idea how that happened. I still don't know. I never really researched it, but it's crazy. So she went to some site and did something or downloaded something that she shouldn't have. That's how I look at it. So you're right.
So,
Chromebook it is.
Well, so this kind of goes back to the whole theme of this podcast, and that is, what of all the things that we've talked about, you know, the list of a couple of things that people were talking about on Twitter and the other ones that we've discussed here, you know, some of the items were very, you know, in the weeds sort of security sorts of things, and they probably, like, how much does a YubiKey cost? I don't even know anymore.
I don't know. I have to look it up.
I'm sure it probably doesn't cost too much, but you know, there's certainly an expense and a cost of training on it and getting up and running and all of that. And how much is that really going to move the needle for you compared to some of these other things that are a lot lighter weight to do and really are more tailored towards a lot of the, you know, essential sorts of vulnerability aspects, I think, you know. So, you know, a Chromebook and a password manager, those are two great ones. I think one that we also didn't talk about was to just sit them down and make sure that they've implemented multi-factor authentication in every account that they've got.
That would be fun.
I mean, I know it would be a pain, but that, you know, aside from the password manager, I think that...
But just imagine the day they get the text because somebody's trying to break in, then they get another text say, hey, I'm working on your email. Can you send me the notification or the verification code you just got? And I could just see my mother and father just sending it, being like, well, they asked for it. They must. I don't know who it was. By the way, YubiKeys are about $50.
You can get $50.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, a Chromebook's not cheap, but you're going to have a laptop anyway, which is sort of where I'm coming at this from. All right. So, you know, basically, this is sort of what we're going to be talking about is, you know, what stuff is worth it and does it move the needle and, you know, what all is out there and does...
It's not so much worth it as what's sensible. It's like common sense security, right? It's users are the biggest vulnerability in any organization, but also in the world. And we're just trying to talk about what's practical. Let's have practical security instead of information security.
Well, that's right, Chris. All right. Well, we are running out of time today. So how about we talk about what we're going to do next week? Ready?
Well, yeah. I think
all right. So
that's your game.
For the next week, we've got Malcolm Harkins coming on, and he's going to talk about the cyber industrial complex and the paper that he wrote about this. He's a well-known speaker in the information security space. A lot of you listening probably know him, probably have met him, probably have seen him talk quite a few times. So we're excited to have him on the show. Looking forward to it. And I think we're also going to start a new program here on Leap Posen, where we're going to have the tip of the week to show just how cool you are in the information security space without actually having to know anything. So, Chris, I'm going to throw it at you for the first Posen tip of the week.
Seriously. We had a bunch of them last time we spoke. And I don't know if I can think of any right now.
All right. Well, here, I'll throw out the first one then just to get you started. So on your Zoom call, everybody, to make sure that everybody knows how much you know about information security, make sure that behind you, you've got all the badges from all the conferences that you've attended hanging up somewhere, highly visible. Make sure that you've got the DEF CON badge front and center on top of the pile. And, the deeper the pile, the better, obviously. And the more spread out that you've got it, make sure you do that. And make sure it's behind you on the Zoom call so that people, you know, when they're looking, they're going to say, oh, well, he went to all those conferences. So obviously, you know what he's talking about. So anyway, I would say that's our Posen tip of the week. What do you think, Chris?
No, I think it's a great start. I was going to throw in there, because I see this every day in our corporate email, the string.
Don't save it. You can save it for the next one.
Okay. All right. I started. I gave it away. Now we got to remember it for next week. But I will.
Okay. All right. I'll just cut you off there. Okay. Well, with that, we are going to wrap this one up. Looking forward to seeing everyone else on the next edition of Leap Posen.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Leap Posen Podcast with Cody Walmsley and Chris Coryell. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.